the first stage is loss of speech.
Claire. Claire?
The second stage is physical disorientation. The third stage is fatal.
Hello and welcome to Step and Repeat, a weekly movies and awards show podcast. I am Andrew, and I am joined here today, as always, by Matt.
Hello.
And you just heard the trailer for The Happening, which is our movie of the week. So thank you. I have to say is the word The Happening, and you start laughing.
Take this very seriously or it's Step and Repeat.
So for those of you who are joining us for the first time or for the first time in a while, we're in the middle of what we're calling our quarantine season, where each week we pick a theme for you all, and then you, the listener, pick the movie based on the theme and our candidates for movies. And this week, our theme is virus movies, and you have chosen for us, for better or for worse, to watch the 2008 thriller The Happening, starring Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel. Again, it's just all we have to say is the word is The Happening, and laughter erupts. That's the disease.
Yeah, it's... I can't take this seriously.
So it should be a good podcast then.
Yeah, this should be very interesting.
But before we get into that, are there any sort of industry updates, coronavirus quarantine updates you want to talk about?
Well, more like movie updates in general. More movie and entertainment industry updates. I guess we can call this the news version of our podcast, if you will. So I guess I just had a couple things I wanted to talk about. I know a couple of big updates this week. Disney Plus has announced that they are going ahead with the Cassian Andor series. We all remember Cassian Andor from the movie Rogue One. And Genevieve O'Reilly is coming back as Mon Mothma. I think that's pretty cool. Kind of see how they bring a new Star Wars show to Disney Plus. I really like The Mandalorian, so I think that's pretty cool. Some more big news this week. If you were a fan of Penny Dreadful, the new spinoff show, Penny Dreadful City of Angels, starts tonight, and that stars Natalie Dormer, and it's on HBO. So another Game of Thrones alum moving over to Showtime, so I'm pretty excited to watch that.
I thought you just said it was HBO. It's definitely
Showtime. Showtime. And big news of the week, which we're all excited for, is Parks and Rec is getting a reunion this Thursday on NBC. I know you're pretty excited, Andrew. I know I am. Big Parks and Rec fans here, so can't wait for that.
I'm excited, but also a little nervous.
Yeah, well, we all know how it's going to turn out, but I'm just happy. I'm excited to see the cast come back again.
Yeah, exactly.
On the screen together.
I have low expectations in case it's not that great. And
then, keep your expectations very low. Yeah. And it'll be the lower your expectations, the better the experience.
Exactly.
That's what I always say. Yeah. So yeah. And I guess I don't know if we were gonna mention the other movies we nominated last week. I don't know if you were going to mention that.
We'll get into that in a second. Okay. Start talking about The Happening, because we have our listener email segment back. We got a listener email this week. So we will kind of dive into that before we start talking about The Happening. So our email this week comes from Corinne. Wonder if there's any relation to friend of the pod, Corinne.
I don't know. How many Corinnes do you know?
At least one now. Who's to say if there are more?
She's my team holiday partner.
True. And she was on a roundtable episode. So So we'll read the this email from Corinne and answer it to the best of our ability. Okay, so Corinne writes, quarantine got me thinking. What is the difference between a movie and a film? Movie seems to be more casual, as in movie theater, going to the movies, and movie star, while film seems to be more formal, as in film festival, film school, and silent film. Would you please clarify the difference between the two words? Thanks, Corinne. All right. Well, thank you, Corinne, for the question. And it's a good question, I think, actually. It's something I've thought about before, too. So do you want to start off on a sort of response? And we'll kind of get the ball rolling from there.
Sure. So I've always, I guess, I haven't really ever thought about it that much. I know the word movie came from moving pictures, and it kind of, the word evolved over time in old Hollywood to movie. And it was like M-O-V-E-E-E, and then kind of transformed into M-O-V-I-E, where we get today. And I guess the difference between movie and film is, I guess, in my opinion, I haven't really done a whole lot of research into this, but I guess movie is like just a fun experience, like the individual movie, like you're going to watch a movie, like, and film more describes the industry, the history of the industry, where it came, like film strips and film and all that. It kind of just defines the whole, the industry of films as a whole. But you can also describe the film industry as the movie industry as well. To me, I guess Corinne is right. She's film does seem more formal in that sense, but I could be totally wrong.
No, well, I think right off the bat is there is no sort of wrong answer, right? It's all semantics. But one, I think, important clarification is that the word film comes from like the physical film of the movie.
Yeah.
So that's just where the word comes from, the etymology. And similarly, the word cinema, which can, in theory, be used interchangeably with these other two, unless you want to sound super pedantic. That comes from the word cinematography, which is like a Greek word, I believe. So, it comes from Greek origins. So film and movies can be used interchangeably. Like, really, there's no sort of difference between them. But basically, what I think Karim kind of pointed out, especially in her examples, were really good, interesting distinctions, where I think the word film is sort of used in more artsier terms to describe the sort of craft of it all, whereas movies are, I think, are the more like the popness of it, like the something that you're making like for a profit, like a capitalist sort of area, whereas like films would be the more art. But again, like, none of this really matters. Like, it doesn't matter.
So I mean, you can also take the route that movie comes from the word motion picture, moving picture, movie, and it's really the motion picture industry. So you have like the Motion Picture Association, you have the motion picture industry. It's all semantics,
if you go to like Wikipedia and like type in movie, or if you type in film, it all goes to like the same page. So I think it's like really interesting. So Corinne uses the words like movie theater, or like going to the movies, or movie star. Like, those are all things that are kind of like embedded in pop culture, right? Like, things that you get money from, like a product. Whereas like film are, those tend to be like, again, like more old school or formal, she said. So like film festival, film school, silent film, like those things have very like artistic like connotations.
Yeah. Like I wouldn't describe you as like a movie buff. I would describe you as a film buff or a film fanatic. So it just seems a little more proper to me.
I did a little bit of research into this after we got the question, and I found a really cool blog, actually. It's like a movie data blog. So, yeah. And we'll post this on our social media pages, but the movie blog kind of like broke down references of the word film versus movies in like various interviews of how people describe them, and like use other sorts of like metrics, like Google searches, like what appears more often. So what they found was that a number of distinctions, but in the industry, people prefer the word film, like 4-1. So almost everyone like who works in Hollywood uses the word film, and like depending on what they do like in production of the movie, they like some people use it more frequently than others. The one that uses the word movies more frequently than film are like people in like post-production, actually. But even still, they mostly use the word film, but they just use movies more frequently. So I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting.
But with civilians, i.e. people who like don't work in the industry, they use the word movie way more frequently than the word film. There's also, not surprising, there are geographical distinctions here too. So this is also kind of a phenomenon that's mostly like within the United States, to use the word movie. So people use the word movie like, I think it's like 80% to like 20% essentially more for the word movie, but in other areas in the world, like, they strongly prefer the word film. It's like almost reversed. So the US uses the word movie most frequently. Do you think you can guess which country uses the word film most frequently?
I'm assuming the UK, but I could probably
The UK was the most interesting, because UK was like close to 50-50. So like they tended to be more they were like pretty even keeled. So all the other ones, like a lot of the other countries, were like, had a strong preference. And again, like, obviously there are translation differences here, but the country that used the word film most frequently is Italy. Followed closely.
What's Italian for film?
I don't speak Italian.
It's film.
Yeah.
Ill film.
But like, so Italy, France, and Germany are the ones that you prefer the word film the most, and the US, Japan, and Australia use the word movie most frequently. So that's not surprising. The European side of things, like, you think of like hoity-toity Europeans like using the word film more frequently, because that's just how Europe is. I just like thought that was super fascinating, and you can also see the change like over time too, especially in magazines like or trade publications, like using the word movie like a little bit more frequently now than they did like even several years ago. So it's like movie internationally and throughout the industry is becoming more accepted.
Yeah. And movie is also another thing too. Movies also evolved from the word talkie. So when motion pictures first started developing sound, that's when, so cinema used to be called motion pictures and cinema. When audio first started, or voices first started appearing in movies, they started calling them talkies. So that was old Hollywood, very old Hollywood. And so you had like the talkie and the movie, and I guess over time the talkie kind of died out as it became more common, but the word movie stuck. So really movie is more of a US American term, whereas film is more of a worldwide industrial term. So just kind of going back on your point as what the rest of the world prefers.
And Anne Bolster's Corinne's argument about silent films, right? Like the silent film wouldn't really be called a movie then, because it wasn't a talkie.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. So it was a moving picture, which is a movie. Yeah. So. I hope that answers your question, Corinne. I don't know if you have anything else to add.
No,
to that,
thank you.
If you have any other.
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. And if anyone else has any questions or things they want answered, shoot us an email at stepandrepeatpod@gmail.com. And we'll do our best to answer. Again, we're not complete experts. We don't have our own blog on movie data yet.
Yeah, not yet. We will.
hope that clarifies things for you.
And if you have any other questions or anything, please always feel free to email us, and we'll do our best to get your questions answered on our podcast. So
truly. All right. Should we move into the happening? A true,
yes,
true cinema. not even movie or film.
I don't even know what you call this. Just garbage.
So to come back to the point that Matt was like making a little bit earlier, the coronavirus has kind of created this huge spike in interest for these virus and pandemic movies. The most notable is the realistic version of this, which was 2011's movie Contagion, and which was like at the top of the iTunes charts for a while. And then Outbreak, the 1995 movie with Dustin Hoffman, got added to Netflix's lineup, and then that became really popular for a month or so. So we decided to kind of like take a look at other movies, and we kind of gave the options to you. And so what our four movies would be. So the four that we came up with were 28 Days Later, Children of Men, The Happening, and Train to Busan. And the winner is... The Happening, which you knew already.
So yeah, and I don't apologize at all for including that in my life.
Clearly,
I had a feeling people were going to want to hear us trash this for
give
now.
The people what they want.
Give them what they want, drama. No, but I mentioned earlier about the other choices. When I was reading the news earlier, did I tell you this? 2 days ago, Netflix just announced they're doing a Train to Busan sequel.
I knew that it was happening, but like I didn't really pay attention to it because I've never seen the first one. So
no, I just because we talked about Train to Busan last week, I this like all of a sudden just came up, and I was like, oh, look at that timing. So.
Well.
But anyways, well,
Train to Busan got literally zero votes. so much well, for my throwing things out there that would have inspired people to watch movies they wouldn't.
Yeah, so your experiment failed. Let's not try.
Yep.
No, but Train to Busan's. I do kind of want to see it. It does look intriguing to me. But the sequel's coming out on Netflix called Hellbound. So
cool.
Something to look forward to if you're a Train to Busan fan or want to become one.
Inspiration.
So, yeah. There you go.
No, I will have to watch that when we're in week 18 of quarantine.
Oh, God. Remember when we said 3 weeks ago that I said if we're going after 4 weeks on this, and we were like, oh, God, I can't even think of that. And
we're
like,
coming up on it.
It's coming up soon. Yeah. So.
Ooh, oh, boy.
I'm losing my mind. Yeah. Anyway, back to that.
Okay. Synopsis in 10 words or fewer?
Well, you've already beat me to it, so why don't you go ahead and read yours?
I remembered this time. The last two times I've been completely unprepared to say a synopsis, and I was totally put on the spot. Well, that's my own fault. But, okay, so I got it this time, and it's exactly 10 words. All right, here we go. Shitty teacher blames suicide by plants as act of nature.
I like it. That's good. That's a good synopsis. Are you ready for
Absolutely.
Mine?
Absolutely.
Mark Wahlberg is a shitty actor. Should have stayed rapper.
We both use the word shitty, which might be a great word to describe this movie.
Oh, I can do another one. Mark Wahlberg, worst actor of all time. Go away.
I think that is fewer than 10.
Yeah. No, that is 10. That is 10 exactly.
There we go.
Mark Wahlberg sucks, sucks, sucks. Sucks, really sucks, sucks more. If you can't tell, I do not like Mark Wahlberg.
This could be a therapy session for all we know. So, like,
yes,
why
I need
like
this so
Mark
bad.
Mark Wahlberg.
I need it so bad. Why? Why don't I like Mark Wahlberg? Have you seen it happen? That's why I don't like Mark Wahlberg. He's a terrible actor. He should not be in existence. Donnie's better. God, and that's saying something.
Which
Jeez.
Is funny because Donnie Wahlberg was in The Sixth Sense.
He's
got spoilers for The Sixth Sense, but he's like the patient at the very beginning or end, depending how you see it, who kills himself.
I guess M. Night Shyamalan's a Wahlberger fan.
Gosh, why? Like, this is the second week in a row we're talking about a movie that deals with suicide, and so this is getting. I know
it's a very real topic.
Yeah, like.
I mean, do you notice
it? It's like
people going insane.
Truly.
With quarantine and viruses. Yeah, it's a trend. So, and we won't get into the serious topic of suicide.
This is also like kind of a horror movie, I guess you could say. And that was like also The Invisible Man. So like, there are like some themes that we're picking up on here, whether this is intentional or not, but like we are like dealing with a lot of the same issues over the past 3 weeks, which is interesting from our small sample size.
Yeah. Was it people going crazy? Pretty much people going crazy.
That's all of them so far.
So, okay. All right. So I guess we'll just dive into happening in our review.
Yeah.
You,
so
you will. I don't even know where to begin.
Well, like the real synopsis, if you're, I guess, unfamiliar, I got this, I don't know, from IMDb or somewhere, but it's a science teacher, his wife, and a young girl struggle to survive a plague that causes those infected to commit suicide.
I love that, like, a science teacher's wife and a young girl struggle to survive a plague. Like, they're the only ones.
I know.
Everyone's struggling to survive a plague. It's not.
It's like the definition of plague.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
And I guess quick, fast facts. This movie came out in 2008. Came out on June 13th, 2008, which was Friday.
Great year for movies.
Friday the 13th. I did not know. And it was only until I watched the trailer again and they really hyped that up that it was being released on Friday the 13th.
A lot of Don't a lot of horror movies try to like release themselves on Friday the 13th?
I know. For obvious reason.
That's not very rare.
Yeah. And it made $64.5 million at the domestic box office, which was honestly more than I thought it was going to be.
That is $64 million.
I really thought it was going to be like much lower, like 20 or 30 million, but people like saw it. So
yeah,
I saw it in theaters.
This was like at the height of M. Night Shyamalan, right? Like,
yeah, I guess
I don't remember what was before. I know The Village and The Sixth Sense were quite a few years before that, but I think Lady in the Water was 2006, right? And then Signs was pretty big. Signs was huge. That was 2004 or 2003, I believe.
But
I guess
let's right off the bat, let's dive into M. Night Shyamalan's career. And I don't want to like relitigate too much because I know I've talked about like The Village and how much I love The Village actually, but just to kind of like go through the timeline. So 1999, The Sixth Sense is like really when his career took off. He also, turns out, by the way, co-wrote like movies like She's All That. Did not know that.
I could have lived my life not knowing that.
But it's like so fascinating. It's like She's All That and The Sixth Sense are polar opposite movies. So 99 does The Sixth Sense. 2002 does Signs, and Signs is really well received. Like, people still really love Signs. They may be like, oh, it may not be like a masterpiece the way that The Sixth Sense is, but it's like really, really good. 2004,
you're missing
Unbreakable. Oh my god, I'm sorry. And it's one of my favorites, and that is a common problem.
So The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable are like two of his best. Like, those were his early works. And then, all right, sorry.
No. Thank you. That was a very grave error on my behalf.
Yeah.
And
everyone forgets about Unbreakable, and I always
think, I know, and
Unbreakable.
I like, not to jump too far ahead, but I like Unbreakable, but to be honest, I do forget about it. Like, I don't know why. It doesn't really resonate with me that much. But I like it. I don't know what to think. So then Signs, then in 2004, The Village. And The Village is start to where critics and like audiences don't like some things.
Well, The Village was very polarizing.
So, but like, that's where he gets his like first really big detractors.
Well, a lot of people were very angry about The Village and how it ended, the surprise ending. A lot of people were very, very angry about it. And I was too. I'm in that camp of that I don't like The Village. I didn't like the way it ended. I thought it ruined the whole movie. And I thought I thought The Village could have been so much better than what it was. And it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I can't really sit here and dissect it, but I just remember I hate The Village. But I get yelled at a lot when people say, oh, I love
The Village. No, like, a lot of people don't like The Village. I think The Village is great because it's like a 9/11 allegory. And there are previous podcasts that I've talked about this. So feel free to listen back. But that's the one thing that I really like about The Village, is people who hide away from like reality by like going into their shells. So I think that's really an interesting sort of character study, especially after 9/11. But regardless, like, people had negative connotations with a lot of The Village. And then after that came Lady in the Water. And that was the first one that, like, people really, really started to dislike M. Night Shyamalan. They're like, wow, this movie's bad.
Yeah. Like, what is this?
I never saw it. That's one of... Yeah.
Oh, really?
And but I would say Lady in the Water was the first one that was universally panned.
I would agree. Yeah. You should watch it just to sit through it and understand why.
So then he did The Happening in 2008, also universally panned. Again, The Happening, cue the laughter.
God, what a joke.
And then in 2010, he did The Last Airbender, which was like a different sort of movie in the sense that like it wasn't the horror movie that was gonna have like horror elements or but twist ending.
It was still a disaster.
Like, and arguably possibly his worst from at least the corners of the internet that I'm on.
You haven't gotten this.
Which might be the next one. So 2012, I believe. 13. 2013. Okay, so and that was the movie After Earth.
There's rock bottom. Ding ding ding.
So with Will Smith and Jaden Smith.
That movie is unwatchable.
So I think I could be wrong here, but I don't think so. After those like train of disasters, so you had Lady in the Water, The Happening, Last Airbender, and After Earth. Like people are essentially like, how is this guy still getting like paid to make movies?
But then like someone all of a sudden knocks some sense.
So and he went the right, he did the right thing after that, which he knew this, like he was very self-aware of this. And then he like made a very, very small movie with like no stars really, but like it was a moderate success and like got okay like reviews. It wasn't trashed, and that was The Visit, which I think was 2016, somewhere around there.
Visit was 2015, yes.
And then
Catherine Hahn was in it. I love Catherine
but like Hahn. Again, like I don't think a lot of people, unless you pay close attention.
Right. Yeah, it's like, it's a bunch of unknowns. Yeah, I guess
so. Not Will Smith level for sure. So then after that, he like built up some goodwill, built up that like political capital, that goodwill. And then he went on to make Split, which got great reviews, actually. It was like definitely his best reviewed movie in over a decade. And
Split was great, yeah.
And then after that, he made a sequel to Split, which was Glass, and that didn't get so but like even still I feel like he has enough goodwill that like the reviews for Glass almost seem to be more of, oh, that was a disappointment, rather than, oh, that was trash, like the way that The Happening or After Earth or Lady in the Water get trashed.
Right. I think a lot of people are more disappointed by Split than anything else. Or I'm sorry, Glass by anything else, because they knew it was going to be like a follow-up to Unbreakable mixed with, I guess, Split and kind of creating this universe. And it just kind of didn't turn out as good as it could have been. And it also came out in January, so I knew that was kind of a sign that.
So did Split, though. Split came out really early in the year, though, too.
Split came out in February,
Same difference.
Which is still, the same thing. But, and I think that's also why I was pleasantly surprised by Split, because of when it was coming out. And I was like, why is this actually good? But then Glass, I guess, turned around. I don't know. I think maybe they were trying to do too much. They were trying to do too much, but didn't do enough with what they had. Does that
totally
make sense?
I wonder if they like rushed it into production because they didn't expect Split to be such a success. I'm just theorizing here. My personal relationship with M. Night Shyamalan films is, I'm looking back, it's kind of interesting because the last movie that I saw that he directed was The Happening. I have not seen any of his other movies since The Happening. Even though I don't hate M. Night Shyamalan, but like I do wonder if like the negative press had like an impact on the way that I approach his movies, because like why haven't I watched Split, or why haven't I watched The Visit, even though they got good reviews?
I think you should give Split a chance. I think you would like it. Anya Taylor-Joy and James McAvoy are very talented actors, and they're very good in it together. So their chemistry is very good. So I think you should.
Yeah. Give no, a it's.
Chance. I can't believe
I'm
saying this, but
what I'm saying is not. I'm saying this is subconscious, not a conscious sort of effort on my behalf. Yeah. Like, I didn't avoid Split, or I tell myself I didn't avoid Split because of M. Night Shyamalan. But, like, what if that is a reason as to why I chose not to seek it out compared to, another sort of movie? So, like, maybe it had more of an effect on me than I thought it did. Because, like, why haven't I watched a M. Night Shyamalan movie since 2008? So, I don't know.
That sounds, I know. It was probably, you were probably turned off by The Happening, which is a great segue into The Happening.
So this got an 18% rating on Rotten Tomatoes,
which is 18% too high. Sorry.
Roger Ebert gave it a positive review, funnily enough.
Oh, and I've just lost all my respect for Roger Ebert. I honestly haven't looked at any positive reviews. I haven't seen any positive reviews about this movie.
Well, 18 out of 100.
That's still pretty abysmal, but I guess eighteen out of 100 people like this movie. Okay,
it's pretty bad.
It's pretty. We actually agree for once.
So
on a movie I don't like.
Why don't you like it?
The performances are some of the... let me back up. The Happening is a movie. The concept, the idea of The Happening is horrifying. It's terrifying. The way it's executed is awful. So in that sense, I really think the idea behind The Happening is a good idea. Not that it's a great idea for real life, but like it's a good idea for a movie. And it's absolutely terrifying to think about that... a virus or something is in the plants that we live around and interact with every day that can kill us. That being said, the way this message is put across or put out there was just very lazily done and written. It was not cast well. It was not acted well. It was not written well. It was just, I just felt like The Happening was trying so hard to be above a B movie, but I guess M. Night Shyamalan should have known what he was making was just that, was a B movie. He tried to take it too seriously. And that, with the perfect storm of putting one of the worst actors of all time, Mark Wahlberg, in there, just did not help its case at all. And I just, like, when I think of The Happening, I think of that zoomed in shot of Mark Wahlberg trying to think about what to do in the middle of a field as everyone is committing suicide around him. And that's just like, that is the epitome of The Happening. And that is like how I feel watching this movie. So yeah, it's just a whirlwind of terrible things happening all at once.
So I don't particularly like it either. And I'm glad you brought up the B movie aspect, because M. Night Shyamalan has some quotes prior to its release saying that he was going after a B movie effect.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of find that, if true, it was very poorly executed, because I feel like there are some good B movie elements to this, and there are some things about this movie I will defend in a minute. But well, because I'm always trying to find like the good in something. I'm like, is this a bad movie? Like, like what is it about it that I don't like? Or like I have to like really think about it. So the only movies that I say are like god awful are like movies that I find like categorically offensive. So and I don't find this movie like offensive. It's just like a badly made movie. And so back to the B level thing. So it's like trying to be a B movie, but it takes itself like way too seriously to be a B movie. So like it's kind of it kind of ends up getting caught in the middle of, like, it can't really commit to the seriousness of it, but then it also can't commit to the camp. And, like, it's like it goes back and forth between the two. And I'm like, what kind of movie am I watching? It's like, so I just ultimately, based on its, like, indecision, it just, like, falls flat, which is, like, sad, because then it just ends up being a boring failure rather than, like, an interesting failure. So, yeah, that's, like, that's the reason why I don't like it. But, like, if it were a B movie, if it just, like, totally leaned into its, like totally outrageous ideas, like, some of the stuff, like, is kind of fun. Like, there's, like, the scene with, or scenes with, at, like, a country house with this, like, crazy, like, grandmother figure. Like, that's, like, kind of campy, but they, like, don't lean into that too much. Like, some of the stuff they take, like, too seriously, which are primarily the scenes with Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel. Yeah. Which, of course, is, like, the entire movie.
And poor Zooey Deschanel, someone who's so talented, was just caught in the middle of this, all of this.
Funnily enough, this role was almost went to Amy Adams.
And, really? Huh?
I know. And I was, like, doing some research, and Mark Wahlberg, in his press interviews for the movie The Fighter with Amy Adams, came out
and not, like, you, not you, and not you.
Yeah. So they talked about that, like, how Amy Adams, like, was almost cast, and Mark Wahlberg had, like, said something. He's like, well, she dodged a bullet there, and that, like, caused literally said that.
Yeah. It's like, I didn't want you saying this. I didn't even want people to know that I would have been considered for this movie.
Yeah. But, like, so, like, that sort of stuff is just, like, kind of, like, fun. It's, like, stuff you can laugh at. But then, like, then comes, like, the Mark Wahlberg and, like, Zooey Deschanel-ness of it all. And, like, again, like, it tries to take itself, like, seriously of, like, a relationship that has fallen apart and they need to get back together. And if this movie wanted to take itself seriously, because I think you're right about, like, the whole concept of it could serve a good movie, but, like, there could be an interesting angle here of, like, depression, right? And, like, having Alma, who's Zooey Deschanel's character, like, be depressed and, like, trying to, like, work through the problems of depression with her partner, but, like, those sort of themes are, like, not explored at all. And so that would have been a interesting serious movie, but, like, they don't even go that deep into that, so it's just kind of, like, left with this, like, bland sort of story of, like, protecting, like, a girl who doesn't talk, like, and, like, that's the whole idea, is to get her to, like, talk and then, like, figure out their problems, and their problems are magically solved by deciding that they just, like, want to be together at the end of the world. And, like, that's it. Like, that's how they know that they're, like, fine. Yeah. Like, okay. And that, and then they have, like, a child 3 months after the fact. Like, that's messed up, because, like, as we all know, babies cure everything. So,
yeah,
personal problems.
All personal problems are just solved.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, it's just, like, cleanly ties up everything. And that's, like, the serious side of things. Like, I like the campy side of things more than I like the serious side in this movie. So, like, that's kind of ridiculous. So, like, it doesn't do either that well.
Yeah.
And that's why it kind of fails for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess there are some clever moments in terms of, like, deaths and stuff that are kind of, like, like, if you're into that kind of stuff, like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah. I guess, like, I don't know how to word this properly.
So,
but like, I don't want to be like, oh, Suicide's cool, but
I know. Yeah.
But if you're into like horror movies, like some of the deaths are kind of neat, especially in the beginning.
I think, yeah, I agree. Like, I think the visuals are the most interesting thing about this. And like the way that some like people kill themselves are like, it's like, oh my God, that's like really scary to look at. So one of the most interesting ones I think is like at the very beginning when there's this shot of like three construction workers like jumping off a building and then just their listless bodies like falling to the earth. And like, that's like really scary to look at.
Terrifying. Yeah, like they show you like some very graphic deaths and like some like scenes you just want to can't turn away from. I remember this scene like with the lion, like they're watching on TV, like this lion like maul this man, like ripping, like, or pride of lions, like ripping this guy's arms off. It's like, that's so disgusting, but I can't look away. It's terrifying. That kind of stuff is terrifying.
Quick poll. What's your favorite death? Is it the lion?
Oh, are you asking me? Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, you already actually said it. I think the most interesting death, or the coolest death was when they were jumping off the construction workers were jumping. But my second favorite one was the scene with the lawnmower where the guy turns the lawnmower on and lays in front of it.
That's my favorite.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're all gruesome, but like those are my two favorites. Like, they're
okay. Sure. So yeah. To come back to the lion scene real quick, I found that so fascinating because this woman is like watching this footage on her phone and she's like, my cousin just sent this to me. She's like, you gotta see this. Like, as if like, if a stranger in any sort of circumstance, if a stranger like came up to me, be like, you gotta see this person dying, but like right here, I'd be like, who the fuck are you, lady?
Yeah, like, ew, like that, yeah, no. I remember there was a scene. What was it? Everyone's like standing in a circle watching this woman talk to her daughter as she's like committing suicide, and like he just like Mark Wahlberg just walks away. Like nobody cares.
Oh my God. Like I know exactly what scene you're talking about because this woman's on the phone with her daughter who is committing suicide and Mark Wahlberg takes the phone from the mother like just to talk to her and he's like, oh, like, don't go outside. And I'm like, that woman's daughter is about to die and you just want to take the phone just to like be like an authoritarian figure to her? Like, what a dick move.
Yeah. like this plot is just awful and it's like, this is not at all how I would react in something like this. And then just, I don't know. And then just to tie it all up in the end, it just ends. Like, there's no ending. There's no resolve. It's just like, well, the virus like came and went in like a matter of like 18 hours. And like there was no explanation, nothing. It was just terrible. The way it ended, everything.
It is kind just of
everything's so bad. Yeah.
So you said something interesting, which was, I don't know if this is how I would react at all. So given the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic for COVID-19, how do you think this holds up in comparison?
Well, this is a little more extreme than what we're seeing now.
Yeah.
But there
are some similarities, right?
Right. See, when you want to talk about similarities, talking, I guess, more about like Contagion is way more similar than this. But I do. So I guess for The Happening, I feel like at first it's kind of opposite as to what people are going through now. Like, I feel like people kind of freaked out way too much and went and bought everything off the shelves at the store and like all the toilet paper and just hunkered down and like, like those people who like freaked out, and like in the happening, like no one took it seriously at first until like everyone started committing suicide, and then like it just happened within a matter of like minutes. Like people had no idea what was going on, and then like I don't even know how to compare it from that point on. So,
well, like at least one thing about the virus in the happening is that they like talk to people on TV like who instantly knew what it was, like within a matter of like hours after it happened.
Yeah, they figured out who it was, like, or what it was so quick.
Yeah, and like, how it
like
works.
How convenient is it? Is it that this plant specialist, like you're with this plant specialist, and like I don't know, it's so stupid.
So it's just like. Like that was like obviously super unrealistic that it like just could not get behind that, like all these experts like knew how it affected the brain chemistry in like 10 minutes. So that was crazy.
But yeah, that's great. Like yeah.
Like when I say like the similarities, like the kind of like fun aspects are like they figure out that you can't be in groups and that like that's how the virus spreads.
Yeah.
And so like I was like, oh look, like kind of social distancing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like then they keep talking about doing things like being inside. Like you gotta be inside. You gotta be inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stay inside. Yeah.
Yeah. So so those were like kind of at least
except fun. Like they don't stay inside, and like at the end, like Mark Wahlberg's like, "Oh, I want to be with you," and then like walks outside, like, "Oh, I guess this is the end," and then just give up, and then go outside and like hold hands, like him and Zooey Deschanel.
I know it's
and
so.
And I'm like, so like, what are you like protesting this? And like, you just want to be together? Like, I don't get. So I guess they're like the protesters.
There must have like I swear yeah. There must have been a different ending to this movie because
Great Pennsylvania.
Oh, also, like, and speaking of Pennsylvania, because it bothers me because almost all of, if not all of, M. Night Shyamalan's movies take place in Pennsylvania, but, like, the way that they refer to things in this is, like, they make it almost sound as if he wasn't from Pennsylvania, so they talk, they use, like, weird terms. They're like, oh, like, in the city of Philadelphia. Like, okay, so number one, anyone from Philadelphia is not going to call it Philadelphia. Like, offhand, like, they're going to call it Philly.
Philly,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, and, like, this is kind of, like, insulting to, like, the intelligence. Like, I can figure it out that Philly
yeah.
means Philadelphia. So yeah. They'll be like, and then there's, like, another line. They're like, we have to go to the town of Princeton. And it's like, just say Princeton. Like there's
yeah. Say Princeton. Everyone knows where Princeton is.
Yeah. Like there's no need for like this really bad writing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
They're like, where did they stop? Where did the train stop? It was like we're in the town of whatever. Yeah. Like that's when you call it the town.
Yeah.
Like, not exactly. The town of Princeton.
Yeah. Or like so again, this is like a stop on the train, and like the train conductor is like, this is a town called Elston. Or like, or just yeah, say Elston. Like, it's
yeah.
that sort of thing is just like so ridiculous.
That's so stupid.
Like, it's not how people speak. So it's
yeah,
just like,
and maybe that's like one of the things is like that I don't like about this movie is that M. Night Shyamalan thinks we're stupid. Like the audience is stupid. So he has to like it's written in a way that everything just needs to be explained to us. And we don't need that.
Yeah.
So, and that's what frustrates me a lot about this movie, I guess, if we really want to get down to it. So yeah. This has been very therapeutic so far. Thank you so much.
Good. I'll come back to the end real quickly. You reminded me with the Pennsylvania comment. So like, I swear that this movie must have had a different ending at first, and then they changed it because like, there's no climax to this movie. So it just kind of like, they like you said they like run out into a field and decide they like want to be together, like, but then like comes out of nowhere. There was no setup sort of to that moment and like no drama leading up into that. It happens so
yeah,
quickly.
It happens very quick. Yeah.
And like, and then they're like, oh, I guess the virus is over. So it's like, what? And then like, and then the next thing you know, there's like an epilogue and it's like, oh wow, this movie's over. But like, thank God, because this movie's only 90 minutes. So it's at least it's short.
Oh my God. Yeah. If this movie were any longer than what it was, I don't know if I could sit through it, but I really appreciate being able to trash talk it. Yeah. So.
So I'm like going on the reviews on Letterboxd and most of them are pretty horrible, but but again, because I want to understand things, is that I need to look at like the good reviews and like saying like how people like defend this movie. And so
you need to understand the other side.
And so that, but I don't even agree with them. So they're saying they're like we get this isn't like an amazing movie, but like it deals well with like how people act irrationally in like the type of in a time of crisis. And I'm like,
no, it doesn't.
I know. I'm like, where are you getting this from?
What?
Yeah, I'm serious. This is like one of like the top five reviews on The Happening in Letterboxd right now. Okay. So, oh, and I quote, I pulled it up. I quote, fear of a crisis with no rational solution quickly mutates into fear of irrationality itself, end quote. That was, that's...
What does that even mean?
Yeah, like, people don't know what to do, and then they freak out, and then they're freaking out because they know they're freaking out. So, but, like, again, this could have been, like, an interesting thing about, like, depression with, but whatever. Like, I'm not gonna try and make a retcon a better movie out of this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I don't know how you can defend it.
So, speaking of therapy, Mark Wahlberg of it all. I'm sorry. This was torture for you.
Like, I do not understand how, like, anyone can think he's a good actor. He is... Like, he is the worst part of the good movies that he is in. I think he drags down any movie he's in. Like, even in The Fighter, which is an amazing movie, he is the worst part of it. In The Departed, which is an amazing movie, he is the worst part of it. And was, like, the only one who was not nominated for an Oscar.
Was nominated.
In
The Departed. One? The Departed.
He was not nominated, right?
No, he was.
Oh, so he wasn't nominated for The Fighter. So he was nominated for, I know he was nominated for one and not for the other. So, okay.
Yeah.
So he was nominated for, but like, that was like, no, I do not think he like deserved, he was not good in The Departed at all. Or the only reason he was good was because he had a Boston accent and it took place in Boston. And like, that's why you got your Oscar. Other than that, in The Fighter, like you brought that movie down. It could have been so much better if you were cast otherwise. I hope you're not listening to this podcast because I know how powerful of a family the Wahlbergs are. But it's just like, it's so soothing for me in this time of need to vent about how much I hate Mark Wahlberg.
Have you ever seen Boogie Nights?
Yes, I have, unfortunately.
I really like Boogie Nights. I actually, that is the one thing I'll say, like, that's a legitimately good performance for him. But in essence, he's kind of playing himself.
Mark Wahlberg's playing Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, a little bit, and that's like kind of what makes the movie so great. So, so like that worked, and like that was like his first big role, if not role period. And so it was like, oh, this is awesome. Like then, like because
I mean that's why people like Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because Brad Pitt is playing Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I can't say I like support a great number of other Mark Wahlberg support performances. I don't hate him in The Departed. I don't think he's like at the caliber of some of the other people, but it's like fun enough that like it's good. It's good like fun distraction. I don't think it's Oscar worthy, but
no, not at all.
Yeah, and at least like kind of in recent years, I think after The Departed, people mistook Mark Wahlberg as like, oh, this like actor, like we need to take him like seriously now. And I don't think there have been that many of those roles as of late. Like, I can't think of any since The Fighter that were, like, serious movies. So
yeah, I don't know. And I don't even know if he has any coming up.
Yeah, so he's, like, and part of what makes, like, Mark Wahlberg, like, not a good actor is, like, he has no expression, really, kind of, in his delivery of dialogue. He has, like, almost everything seems feigned in a sort of way, in a way that, like, you can tell he's acting. So, so, like, that doesn't work in a lot of cases. So, there's no, like, emotion or sort of passion behind any of his performance. So, like, again, like, that's, like, a key part of acting is connecting with somebody.
Like, so I will say I didn't hate him in Deepwater Horizon, if you've ever seen that movie. But then he went on to do, like, Transformers, so I'm like, you've lost all credibility with me.
All is
what?
All is null.
Yeah, all is null. So, I was like, are you, like, kind of redeeming yourself in my eyes? And then, like, I saw Transformers, and I was like, oh, nope, okay. But, yeah, Deepwater Horizon is actually a pretty good movie that I will not hate on him for. I prefer Mark Wahlberg as a producer rather than an actor. He produced Boardwalk Empire, which is, like, one of my all-time favorite shows, as well as I know he's produced Ballers, which I haven't seen yet. It's on my list, and he actually produced a miniseries on HBO called McMillions, which I need to finish, but it's really good so far. So about the Monopoly scandal.
He almost definitely produced Entourage, if not. I'm almost certain he produced Entourage.
I've never seen Entourage, so but yeah, I prefer Mark Wahlberg behind the camera instead of in front of it. So that's where I believe his talent lies.
Yeah. And like his like deadpan sort of delivery I think works better in a comedy setting. So like just stick there, like that's fine. Yeah.
Like in a movie where you need to be high all the time, like Ted, go for it. but not The Happening.
Well, speaking of The Happening and bad Mark Wahlberg acting, should we bring up the scene?
I don't know what scene you're talking about, but okay.
The famous, infamous, notorious scene of Mark Wahlberg having a conversation with a plant.
With a plant, yeah. That is the most awkward 30 seconds in film history.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. Oh, he's literally talking to the plant. He like goes up to this plant in the corner and he's like, I know we're in your house. Can we use your bathroom? Like, we don't mean any harm. Like, that's literally how the scene goes.
It's so hard to watch. It's so difficult. And then, like, it's written in the script that, like, I'm talking to a plastic plant.
Oh.
Like, just delete the scene.
The best part about that scene, because I knew it was famous, and I've, like, seen it before, but I haven't seen it since, like, I saw it the first time. The most ridiculous part about this scene is that the sad part within the context of the scene is that he's talking to a plastic plant, not the fact that he's talking to him, period.
Yeah.
So he's like, what? Oh, it doesn't matter. It's plastic. So,
yeah. Like... So here's like a perfect example of like one, bad writing, and two, no stage presence whatsoever. This man does not know how, like, he does not have comedic timing. He doesn't like, he could have made that scene funny. Like, that could have been like a comedic relief. But instead, it's just awkward and so painful to watch. And like the direction there is just so bad. It's nothing about that scene is funny. I mean, it's so bad that it's funny. But I mean, it could have been some kind of comedic relief. And it's just it's a perfect example of how you can take a good idea and make it painfully awkward and terrible, which is just a metaphor for this movie.
What? No.
Yeah.
That's like.
Do you think he wanted to be there? Do you think he wanted to be in this movie?
I think, yeah. I read at least his quotes from like 2010 in his Fighter interviews. And he said, he was like, well, I wanted to play a science teacher because it wasn't a cop or like a crook. So like, he just like took whatever. So it was like, maybe, maybe not. But like, again,
and then
if it was well reviewed, then, like, he wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like 2 years later, he goes on to do The Other Guys, which where he plays a cop. Like,
I know
he tries to be a funny cop with Mark. Ferrell.
Whatever his name is.
Will Ferrell, thank you. And again, like, funny, it just doesn't work. So, I'm not like panning the director or anything. I think Will Ferrell's great, but like Mark Wahlberg just like does not work in comedic roles. He doesn't, or like any role in general, but he doesn't. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. Or like, also, I'm going in with it like any Mark Wahlberg movie with like a bad attitude and low expectations. So like that also is a deterrent.
No, I don't particularly care for The Other Guys either, even though that's one of his more well liked movies.
Yeah,
weirdly. Well, there are at least some good actors in this movie.
Yes.
And there is a pre-reunion, if that's a word.
A pre-union. We've made it forward. Good job.
Future Succession actors, both Jeremy Strong and Alan Ruck, make cameos in this movie. One's actually even like more than a cameo. Like Jeremy Strong's like kind of a real role.
Jeremy Strong, legit role. I think this was one of his first roles, right? Alan Ruck had been around for a while prior to this. I know he was on Spin City, I think. He was like a TV actor before this. So
yeah,
I knew who he was.
I always interpreted his scene in like The Happening as being a sort of cameo. As a principal, as a sort of nod to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, being like, hey, look, like the student is now the teacher.
Yeah.
So
I'm not gonna lie, I completely forgot he was in Ferris Bueller.
What? That's like what I associate him most with,
I associate him with Spin City. Because I'm gonna get myself into trouble here. I've never seen Ferris Bueller.
No, well, you mentioned on last week's episode that you don't watch like 80s things.
Yeah,
so.
I hate 80s movies. I hate John Hughes in 80s movies in general. So,
in the context of Succession, which I think is one of the best shows on television, if not the best, who is your favorite Roy child out of the two? Connor Roy, played by Alan Ruck, or Kendall Roy, played by Jeremy Strong?
I mean, poor Connor Roy, but Kendall Roy is my favorite in this one. he like takes his role so seriously as like the army guy, and like he just his demise is so sad. He's such like a breath of fresh air when he comes in, especially like knowing who he is. He's definitely a breath of fresh air in The Happening, and I think Alan Ruck is very forgettable in his scene. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, he's not... Yeah. He's, like, a non-factor.
Yeah.
Fun
fact, though, this is Jeremy Strong's second movie.
Is this first notable?
First notable, yeah.
Was his first movie notable?
His first movie was Humboldt County. Do you remember that?
Nope.
I vaguely remember it. It was a very off the beaten path movie. But he was in it. It's about like this like medical student like who's like stranded on a pot farm. It's very weird. So anyway, this was like his first notable movie.
It's I don't know why, but I'm obsessed with like how old actors were at the time of their roles, and like Jeremy Strong was younger than I am now when he filmed The Happening. So it's like it's weird for me to think oh wow, he like already did The Happening, and now he's like really famous from Succession. So it's like
Well, his big break, I think. So I know he was on The Good Wife for a long time. And then after that, he was on his next like significant role was Masters of Sex. He was like on that towards the end. And then obviously Succession came after that. But he really got well known for The Good Wife.
TV's number one boy.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, was he your favorite part of your favorite Roy Child?
In The Happening, I definitely think he's the better actor. But no, my favorite Roy Child is definitely Roman.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Though, funnily enough, the only Roy Child that I like don't really like is Connor. I like find Connor played by Alan Rock like really annoying.
Yeah, yeah. We could get on a whole Succession podcast, but yeah, he's kind of annoying, and yeah, in this role he's.
But not like funny annoying. Like yeah. I find like there are some characters that are like funny annoying. So
annoying.
Yeah, I just don't get his like.
But Jason. I feel like poor Alan Rock always gets like swept under the rug or like tossed to the side, and
yeah, and he's well cast. Like he's it's well great. Cast, it's yeah.
There are always roles that's like, we'll forget about you. We know who you are, but
always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, considering how dated now, like this movie, since it was one of Jeremy Strong's first.
Yeah.
This movie is like oddly dated, even though it's only 12 years old. I feel old saying only 12, but
I mean, 12 years in today's day and age is like it's not a long time wise, but in terms of like technology and everything, it's a long time.
Yeah, George Bush was still in office when this movie came out.
I know. Oh god, what I would give to get that back. Sorry. Oh, by the way, also in this movie, in The Happening, Alan Ruck's character is just named Principal. He doesn't have a name.
No, that's so sad. Principal. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to play a fun little game with you, and since it's also a listener experience, we'll post this online to see what other people think too. But the game is going to be, what is the most 2008 thing about this movie?
Yeah,
and I have some options for you, or feel free to write in a candidate. Okay, so we have chopsticks in hair like the girl at the very beginning.
We have
the quote, see if there's a map in the truck.
The map is brought up on multiple occasions.
Yeah, like as if people still used maps. We do have Jeremy Strong, a Southern good boy soldier. So I feel like that's a very like 2008 thing, like post-war in Iraq, like stereotype, and then of course technology, we have the Motorola flip phone. So what do you think is the most 2008 thing?
Well, about I have movie? My answer, but can I add one?
Oh yeah, no, writing candidate, please.
Mine is the constant use of the word terrorist.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a very post 9/11 movie. And so like obviously a lot of people think that like in this time, like any attack like this is gonna be from a terrorist. So yeah, it's very, very aughts. But the winner for me. And because I had just watched another movie with this the night before, called Bad Education HBO, the Motorola Razr making a comeback 2 nights in a row for me was the most 2008 thing, because I wanted a Motorola Razr so bad. And I remember I got one in 2007, late 2007, and I had it for, and it died like the next year. It was such a terrible phone. so bad. And I don't know, like, I don't know why I wanted it so bad, but I thought everyone looked so cool on their Motorola flip phone razors, like, up to their ears. It's like, you look like you're so busy all the time and so rad. And, like, they're just such terrible phones. But for me, that is the winner. It's the 2008.
The Motorola flip phone.
Yeah. I just, like you can't. It's so blatantly, blaringly obvious, like, when she uses it. Like, it just ruins anything, like, that could have been serious about the movie. When they pull out a Motorola Razor, you're like, yes, that's a Motorola Razor!
It just, it instantly dates it. Yeah.
It instantly dates anything you're watching.
Yeah.
And, like, that, and, like, the scene where they're in, like, the house, the empty, like, show house, there's, like, this giant computer and, like, these giant TVs. And you're like, those are so, that's such 2008 technology. Like, the giant monitor and the giant television set. You're just like, oh my God, that's like, I can't do it.
I know. So. I like, love it. And I, like, wonder, like, all these movies that come out in, like, 2020, like, when we look at back in 2032, it's like, what is going to feel dated?
Yeah. Like, look at that iPhone. Yeah. Like, look at those. Like, what are those earbuds? Like,
yeah,
like, you look so stupid with those in your ears.
It's gonna be so strange.
Yeah. I can't. Like, you remember iPads? Like, so, yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Yes. Also, glad you brought up Bad Education, because that movie was outstanding.
Oh my God. We'll talk about that later. I have a lot of thoughts on Bad Education.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the best movies I've seen all quarantine. So.
I agreed. 100% agree. So if there's one movie you should definitely watch, it's not The Happening, and it is Bad Education.
not so feel good as our next topic is, but it's still a really good movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to say about The Happening?
There's a lot I want to say about The Happening that we just do not have time for. But final grade would be F minus. I'll put it right down there with Richard Jewell. Not for political reasons, just because it is. The Happening is available on Starz streaming, and it's for purchase anywhere else. So if you want to put yourself through that for an hour and 20 minutes, by all means, have a great time, and let me know what you think. We can just divulge together.
My grade is M for mood ring.
How long have you been thinking about that all day?
No, I literally just thought about it. I swear,
this is a mood ring. It has a lot of importance to me.
I don't like. Oh my God. Oh, I need to. This is why I said at the top of the episode, what, he's a shitty scientist. Like, okay, so he's like a scientist that believes in mood rings. Like, okay. Yeah. And like, he also talks about things like to his students. He was like, you know, I read an article the other day. I was like, dude, if you were like a scientist, you'd be like reading peer reviewed studies, not like articles about bee collapse. Yeah. So like, and then he like blames it all on like acts of nature, which again is like anti-science, because he's like saying, he's like, oh, well, like, I guess we'll just never know what happened. Like, dude, that's not what a scientist does. Like, they try and figure it out.
And he's like sitting there telling himself like the scientific method, like he's got to tell himself what it is. Yes, you're such a science teacher, but
he's so bad.
And we didn't even it's so bad. We didn't even get to John Leguizamo.
Oh, his like thankless, like inconsequential role. Like,
yeah, and he's trying to calm this like girl down who's about to die in the back seat, and he's like, tell me.
I know what you're talking about. Sorry.
As he sees like a hole in the ceiling, this like virus is coming in his car, and like he's trying to calm this like girl down by like, I don't even like, what was he doing? Like, he was telling her a math problem. A math problem.
Yeah.
That like made no sense. Oh, like if you had one penny and you doubled that every day, like you'd have $20. You'd have $30. And he's like, no, by the end of the month, you'd have over $10 million. And then she's like, ah!
It was so like, oh my God.
It's like, guess what? $10 million isn't going to matter to you in the next 2 minutes.
2 seconds.
Slam into a tree. Yeah.
Also, he should have gotten a better death. He had like a kind of boring death. He's just like,
God, it was so boring.
All he did, he just cut his wrist.
Cut his wrist with glass.
Okay.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo deserves so much.
Yeah. Better. Like other guys, like get to like jump off buildings and, like run themselves over with a lawnmower and you just like slit your wrist and that's it.
Okay. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. So that was,
I'm calling shenanigans and calling on another director to remake this horrible piece of garbage.
Honestly, I would even say writer. I wouldn't even say director. A new writer. Yeah. I think the
new writer and
the
new writing. Director.
Yeah. The directing's like again, because like I think like the visuals are like kind of cool. Like that stuff like comes from the director. Like that was like all in his mind. So like I think that's like cool, but like again, like anybody who knows like what a scientist is, like could have written this movie better. So like that's it's
anyway.
Even though I find some okay things with it, like this movie is not good.
Total garbage. So anyway, as I said, I could go on for hours and hours about The Happening. Like I could trash The Happening longer than the actual movie itself.
Yeah.
But we're not gonna do that tonight. We're gonna move on to a better, happier message for next week.
Yay! Do you want to tell us what the next week's theme is?
Yes. So next week we are diving into the realm, because we've been in quarantine for so long. We're going on, well, since we started this podcast, 4 weeks for us, but you know, it's been 2 months for everyone else. I feel like everyone needs a nice little pick me up. We all need to feel a little better and a little good about ourselves and about life. So that's why next week, Andrew and I are going to talk about feel good movies. So we're going to use the same format that we've been doing. Andrew's going to pick two movies and I'm going to pick two movies, and then we're going to put it out on social media and vote on what you all want to hear about. So I have four movies selected, and I'm going to narrow it down to two in the next, hopefully, 5 minutes. this has been a long process.
I know, this one was hard.
Feel good movies are kind of hard to describe, because a lot of feel good movies have turning points in them that aren't so feel good, and they don't feel good by the end, or they don't feel good throughout, but by the end they are, in my eyes, at least to me, feel good movies have a nice happy ending, make you feel good about yourself, feel good about life. I kind of went throughout with like the entire movie is more uplifting and the end is very uplifting. But I don't know if you wanted to go first.
So I went with like a kind of different route. I kind of took more as, this is why it's interesting, like the idea of like, what is a feel good movie? So I went like the idea of like a comfort movie. So a movie that's like familiar to me and like I know its plot pretty inside and out, but it's just like enjoyable to like sit down and watch. And I don't think it's like coincidence that there's like,
well, like I know like Sin City inside and out, but that's not a feel good movie.
No, and like my picks are not that. Like I think so my choices, another thing is that I, especially after renting the past three, I definitely wanted to like go more of a streaming route. So my selections are all available on streaming platforms.
Oh good.
So I also found that a lot of my options, even more than my two, were, you could find under like the family section, to be honest. So so my movies are like not rated R. I don't think any of my movies are rated R. So
no, neither am I.
So that's like generally, I think that's the sort of thing, like something you could watch with your parents and feel fine. Mm-hmm. Should we just go into our picks then?
Yeah. Okay. I want to hear yours. So you want to go first?
You went first last time, so I'll.
Sure. Sounds good.
So My first pick came at the inspiration of The Sound of Music, watching The Sound of Music. I was watching it, and like there's at the very end of this, oh no, actually I won't spoil The Sound of Music for you, but there are nuns in The Sound of Music, and they play like a pretty crucial role. And I was like, there should be more movies with nuns and like cool nuns.
I think I know where you're going with.
So, yeah. So then I like was, of course, my first thought was the movie Sister Act.
Yeah.
And it is available to stream on Disney Plus. And so I was like, that's it. That's going to be one of my feel good movies. So I know all the songs like that they sing. It's like peak Whoopi Goldberg, and
now we're going back to the 90s.
Exactly. So that was like one of the movies like I definitely grew up watching. It's VHS a lot. So so it's one movie that definitely brings me comfort. So I had to pick Sister Act.
Cool. I've seen Sister Act one time in my chorus class in eighth grade.
Whoa.
I've never seen it again.
Yeah. So. You guys should have watched Sister Act 2, since that's the one where like they actually have like a chorus class.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe it was Sister Act
2. Oh.
I remember. Yeah. That's the only time I've seen a Sister Act
movie. Yeah. So. They're both good, though. Cool. So, okay. What's your pick? First pick, at least.
Oh God! So I'm still narrowing it down. I have four, and I don't know what to do. Okay, so I'm just gonna go on my gut instinct.
Okay, please.
All right. So a movie I know inside and out, and a movie that I've grown up with, and I can relate to on many, many levels, and know many, many quotes from, is the movie Matilda.
Oh, I almost picked that.
Oh, really?
So I'm so glad. No, this wasn't going to be my pick, but like it was close to. So yay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did.
When I was a kid, I think I watched Matilda like six times a week. I'm not kidding. I relate so much with Matilda and Bruce Bogtrotter. And I think there are so many quotable quotes and scenes, memorable scenes in there. I've never read the book, and I never wanted to read the book because I never wanted to ruin the movie for myself. But I figured since we're sticking with the Danny DeVito theme, I'll go with Matilda. So to me, I love Matilda. It never gets old, and I think it's a great movie.
Yay! Okay, good.
I don't know where it's streaming. I don't know if it's streaming, but. Sorry.
No, well, so it's like interesting because Mara Wilson is like has made at least somewhat of a comeback, I guess you could say, on Twitter. Like she's like a big like, Twitter voice. So yeah. And she like references Matilda a lot. So so it's like fun to watch and follow. So like I'm constantly thinking about Matilda, even though I haven't seen it recently. Yeah. So
She put her blood, sweat, and tears to that cake. Ah, oh, that cake. Love that cake. So Matilda's my second choice. My first choice. Sorry.
Okay. Yay.
I'm glad you're excited.
Okay.
Not so much.
No, because I almost picked it too. So
good. Okay.
Okay. So my second choice was a last minute decision. And I also kind of wanted to stick with the theme here, which was essentially like movies I grew up with. So, and so this is another 90s movie. And this is also.
Oh, don't say it. Don't say it. Cause I think I know what it's going to be.
I'd be surprised. Maybe it is, but I'd be surprised if it's the same one. So this is also something that like I saw like sparked a debate on Twitter recently, again against a bunch of like millennials who also grew up with this movie and like talking about something interesting behind it. And I was like, oh, that actually like is an interesting point that could be something interesting on a podcast. And so this movie is My Best Friend's Wedding.
Oh
yeah,
I've never seen my
wow. Okay.
Well, I've never seen it.
So like there are a lot, speaking of outdated things, like there are a lot of weird outdated things in My Best Friend's Wedding. Like Cameron Diaz is 20 years old in that movie and getting married. So it's like, whoa, this happened in the 90s. Like, it feels really late for that. So, like, there are a lot of like interesting cultural debates around My Best Friend's Wedding that people bring up a lot. But it's like, well loved. It's like, it's a well reviewed movie. It's like possibly, I think, Julia Roberts' best romantic comedy. It's a lot of fun, and like, it's a sort of different sort of movie. I don't think we've done a real romantic comedy since our Holiday / Love Actually debate, so it's like, could be a fun route, and created a debate on Twitter, so
I wonder why. I don't even know the debate.
It was if we pick it, I'll tell you what it is. Or even if we don't pick
it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, sounds good. Well, that's gonna be a new experience for me if it gets picked chosen. So I'm still torn between two, but I guess I will go with a similar route, a route you went with. And so, okay, this is my final zoom. This movie came out when we were in high school, and every time it comes on TV, I have to turn it on. I have to watch it. And I think it's one of the funniest movies of the 2000s. And I think it's great. And the acting, everything is superb. And it always lifts me up and makes me feel better. I laugh every single time I see this at every single scene. And that movie is My Big Fat
Greek Wedding. Yeah.
So, yes.
We both have My Weddings. My Big Fat.
We're on the wedding theme.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding. We have My Big Fat Greek Wedding and My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yes. Yeah. So I figured while we're on the wedding theme, I might as well put that one out there in the ring. So I love My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I think Neil Bartels is hilarious. I think it's one of a kind, a cult classic. And it just gets better and better with age. And I think, one movie, a feel-good movie to me is a movie that's quotable. It has fun quotes, a movie you can quote with your friends and family all the time, and a movie that has just like has scenes that are just unforgettable. I think My Big Fat Greek Wedding is like the epitome of movies that like just make you feel so good. That's my second. Did you want to hear my runner?
Yeah.
So my other two, I could not for the life of me like choose between these two. So my other choice was going to be, if I didn't choose My Big Fat Greek Wedding, a movie we talked about in the podcast a long time ago, and that was Babe.
Oh, I recently watched that. So,
Did you?
No. That would have been like good, like in the sense of I wouldn't know what to say. Yeah. Like I watched it like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and the other choice, my other choice is. Like in a movie I listen to a soundtrack on loop all the time, which was La La Land.
Oh, yeah. I considered that early on, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that was like my number four. But like, I'm glad with my two choices. So
my backup, my initial choice was going to be more of like an action adventure thing. It was going to be National Treasure. So
I've never seen that.
My second backup, I know you've definitely seen, but I thought it was like too obvious. It was Spider-Man. The first one.
Spider-Man? 2002. Oh. Yeah. I've never seen Spider-Man.
Yeah. So
I think I've seen Spider-Man. Yeah. So, I actually just watched it. Yeah. And my mouse pad, which I'm looking at right now, is
again. So like it's something that makes you feel good. So like I knew it was like a, and it was like a very transformative movie for me too, and like my film interest. So or mood.
It was a transformative movie for the industry in general, which is something we can talk about.
And like the National Treasure thing was just like I thought about like an action adventure-y sort of thing. I also considered Indiana Jones too, but I decided to go more 90s. I was like movies that I grew up with that like I know are like happy and generally people our age or 90s kids would find pleasing. So
appreciate. Yeah.
And all of our movies are like within a 10-year time frame. So because it's like what we grew up.
Yeah. Yeah. be open for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So we'll see. We have Matilda, My Best Friend's Wedding, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and Sister Act. So we will put the poll up momentarily, and I can't wait to hear what people pick. I'm really excited. Yeah. I'm excited to watch these four. So
yeah. We got to figure out our next few
weeks.
Because it doesn't look like this quarantine's ending anytime soon.
Exactly. So appreciate those ideas too. So keep those coming in, either to our email. So we got our email again, stepandrepeatpod@gmail.com. And we'll post the polls up on Facebook and Twitter. Our Facebook is facebook.com/stepandrepeatpod. And our Twitter handle is @repeatsteppod. So vote. That's how the winners get selected. So
let your voice be heard. And thank you again to Corinne for writing in to us. And please write in more and ask questions, and we'll answer them on our podcast in the weeks ahead. So unless there's anything else from you,
Andrew? That's all.
All right. So, all right, guys, thanks for listening. And as always, it's an honor just to be considered.